I'm Charlie Shelton Ormond. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, why dog whistles work in politics. What the folks chanting want could be decided less than 2 months from now.
This is the most important election we've ever had.
Election day draws closer, and campaigns are in full force. Virtual town halls and remote speeches have become common. Meanwhile, some candidates continue to assemble crowds of people.
And I'm thrilled to be in Winston-Salem with thousands of loyal, hardworking American patriots. You are great people, great people. I don't know how many people here, but there's a lot.
That's President Trump earlier this week, making his third trip to North Carolina in the last 3 weeks. Whether you're visiting a battleground state or holding an online Q&A, the fact is, if you're on the ballot, then right now, you're trying to woo voters.
This campaign isn't just about winning votes. It's about winning the heart and, yes, the soul of America.
Because if we win, America wins. You know that. You've seen that. You've seen what we've done.
But politicians don't just say, vote for me, and then walk away from the podium. They craft a specific message to appeal to their constituents. And for Donald Trump, one message has been consistent since he ran for president 4 years ago.
We have to bring back law and order.
Back in 2016, Trump's vision of law and order was heavily linked to one thing, immigration.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
And now, in 2020, Trump says the danger stems from ongoing demonstrations and protests.
These people are vandals, but they're agitators, but they're really, they're terrorists, in a sense.
The commonality is that Donald Trump is telling the story of threat and insecurity in a way that's designed to trigger intense fears that are deeply connected to racist stereotypes.
That's Ian Haney Lopez. He's a professor of public law at the University of California, Berkeley. He says President Trump is following a long history of politicians using coded language, especially when talking about race. It's called dog whistle politics.
Dog whistle politics is an intentional effort to use code or imagery or phrases that trigger fears deeply connected to racist stereotypes, but in a way that the people experiencing those fears understand their own reaction as common sense rather than as racism. In other words, the code is meant to hide the racism from the very people in whom it triggers the strongest fear-based reactions. So think about something like illegal alien or terrorist or urban disorder. Those are phrases that trigger fears rooted in stereotypes of people of color as inherently lawless and violent and dangerous. And yet they're carefully expressed in language that on its surface is not racial and that allows people to say, of course I'm worried about law and order and security and criminal illegals and terrorists. Who wouldn't be? It comes across to the people who are fearful as common sense and not as racism.
These incredible people from all over the country, all over the world that were there last night, they walked out to a bunch of thugs. And that wasn't, remember this, that wasn't friendly protesters. They were thugs. They were thugs.
When Trump says these things, he's primarily speaking to his conservative base. But Ian Haney Lopez says using coded language, using dog whistle politics, is effective on, well, everybody.
Look, here's the truth. Most Americans simultaneously harbor deeply internalized racist stereotypes and also firmly believe that racism is wrong. Trump's supporters are not an army of closet Ku Klux Klan members. They are not self-aware, self-conscious bigots. They are not committed consciously to white supremacy. They are people who stand firmly against racism. They're firmly for racial equality. And they also harbor racist stereotypes that they've internalized as a function of coming of age in this society. And I just want to be super clear about this, because this is something I think many progressives don't realize. That's true of many Democrats. And it's also true of many people of color, Latinos, Asian Americans, and also African Americans.
Now, dog whistle politics did not start with Donald Trump. Far from it. Ian Haney-Lopez says this rhetorical technique has been a part of American politics for more than 50 years.
Look, the United States, in terms of its politics, has always been organized around race, because the country adopts race as a way of understanding itself, even in the colonial era. Race as a way of understanding why slavery is supposedly moral and justified. So it was central to the debates about the formation of the country. What changes is that from the 1930s on, and especially with the power, the success of the civil rights movement in the 1950s and the 1960s, open endorsements of white domination and white supremacy become politically unacceptable across the country. This marked a moment when the racial debates in American politics, they don't disappear, they go underground. They shift into code. And this really is in response to the civil rights movement, so we can tie the rise of dog whistle politics precisely to 1963 and a decision by the Republican National Committee and the faction that was supporting Barry Goldwater to begin to build support for the party of big business, as they called themselves, by using racial appeals in the South and eventually across the whole nation.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
In 1964, Barry Goldwater runs on a narrative of racial threat. And the nation itself is still thinking about civil rights and the changes being demanded by the civil rights movement as primarily changes that will occur in the South, the formal dismantling of white dominance, of white supremacy given expression through Jim Crow laws. By 1968, it's clear that civil rights is a demand for racial equality, and that racial equality will require a significant reworking of societal norms and practices all across the country. And by then, whites throughout the nation have become nervous about these racial changes. When Richard Nixon takes up Barry Goldwater's language, there's much more national resonance in 1968, and certainly by 1972, when Nixon wins in a landslide.
Here's Richard Nixon at the Republican National Convention in 1968, accepting his presidential nomination for the party.
And to those who say that law and order is a code word for racism, there and here is a reply. Our goal is justice. Justice for every American.
After Richard Nixon, Ian Haney-Lopez says this coded language remained a staple of political vocabulary, with Ronald Reagan condemning, quote, welfare queens.
Trail extends through 14 states. She has used 127 names so far, posed as a mother of 14 children at one time, seven at another, signed up twice with the same caseworker in 4 days, and once while on welfare, posed as an open-heart surgeon, complete with office.
And into the 1990s, with this from then First Lady Hillary Clinton in 1996.
We need to take these people on. They are often connected to big drug cartels. They are not just gangs of kids anymore. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators.
Dog whistles have also cropped up over the years in political advertisements, perhaps most notably in 1990, when North Carolina Democrat Harvey Gantt ran against the state's longtime conservative senator, Jesse Helms. The ad begins with a pair of white hands opening a letter.
You needed that job, and you were the best qualified. But they had to give it to a minority because of a racial quota. Is that really fair? Harvey Gantt says it is.
And now, with the Trump presidency, dog whistle politics aren't just being used to talk about protesters or government policies. Ian Haney Lopez says Trump also employs this language to talk about the pandemic.
Trump tries to deflect blame for his mismanagement of the coronavirus pandemic onto China, presenting China as, on one level, the geographic origin of the disease, and it certainly is.
We built the greatest economy in the history of the world. We were forced to close it because of the China plague that came in.
But on another level, intentionally trying to stoke people's fears, their racial fears of China and the Chinese as a foreign menace, as a threat to the United States, the national security of the United States.
Remember this, very simple to remember. If Biden wins, China wins. It's as simple as that.
So blame China. Worry about Black Lives Matter. Focus on urban unrest. Those supposedly are the real threats in our lives, when frankly, the actual threat in our lives is a global pandemic that is raging largely unchecked by the federal government.
Let's talk about how people respond to this kind of language. You've actually gone out into the field and surveyed some of this messaging and how people perceive these messages around racial fear and economic financial anxieties. And it turned out that they resonate with a lot of different groups.
This, I think, is really important and I think will and should shock most listeners. I've tested both in 2017 and in the first 2 weeks of July 2020 messages of the sort used by the right to promote racial fear, for example, of illegal immigrants, of sanctuary cities, of protesters in the streets. And when I test those messages and ask people how convincing people find those messages, the majority of whites find those messages convincing. That's not a surprise. The same proportion of African Americans find those messages convincing. Roughly the same, but in fact, slightly more Latinos find those messages convincing. Union households find those messages convincing. Majorities of Democrats find those messages convincing. That is, a lot of progressives say to themselves, Donald Trump's not blowing a dog whistle. He's got a bullhorn. Everybody understands that he's promoting racist messages. No, not everybody understands that. Very few of us, in fact, understand it. On the contrary, the majority of whites, blacks, African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, union households, Democrats, majorities of Americans find those messages convincing because they're presented in code as warnings about illegals or undeserving or welfare queen or what have you, rather than using clearly racist epithets. And that should really shock people in a way that should engender a bit of fright. These messages are powerful. And even if you're not going to see a massive exodus of African Americans or Latinos to the Republican Party, you are going to see ambivalence about whether to vote at all, for instance. So it should be frightening in that sense. But there's another sense in which this should actually be hopeful. Because what we're seeing from the broad convincingness of these messages is that Trump is winning people on the basis of unconscious racist fears in people who consciously believe that racism is wrong and that racial equality is a valuable ideal. And that means we are not a country locked into an inevitable fight between racist whites and the rest of us. That is not reality. The reality is we're a country in which most of us, indeed almost all of us, simultaneously are burdened with deeply internalized racist stereotypes and also believe in racial equality. And the project then, the antidote, is to make people see that their hopes for racial equality are actually the best way to keep themselves safe. And that these stories that trigger the sense of threat based in racist stereotypes are acts of manipulation by powerful elites who benefit when we fear our neighbors.
So how do you convince people that message of unity, that we are all in this together, is the best practice when this other message of stoking division is pretty ingrained? You know, this us versus them mentality is pretty deep in the fabric of our society, even just with political parties. And that seems to appeal to a lot of people. So how do you convince people this unification is the right way to go when they're simultaneously hearing this other messaging that is coming on the heels of a message we've been hearing for our whole lives? You know, come with us because we will protect us from them. And don't worry about what the other side is telling you because we have it right.
The problem isn't convincing people. The problem is convincing politicians, unions, foundations. The problem is convincing messengers. So here's what we're finding. We ran a couple of big tests again in 17 and 18, and then again in 2020. And what we found is this message that we're all in this together, that some people profit from division, that if we reject division and come together, we can take care of all of our families. We found our evidence shows this is the most powerful political message right now, more powerful than the Republicans' racial fear message, more powerful than the standard messaging that you hear from Democrats. It works right now. The challenge is getting that across to Democratic politicians, getting that across to grassroots organizing groups, getting that across to unions, getting that across to foundations. This is a paradigm change.
Ian Haney Lopez is a professor of public law at the University of California, Berkeley. More in just a moment.
Tested is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. And this is a good time to say thanks to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you're an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history. And we couldn't manage without your help. So thanks, and if you are able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to maybe increase your support.
This summer has been characterized as a season of racial reckoning. The killing of George Floyd and the COVID death toll in communities of color sparked months of coming to grips with long-standing, lethal racial inequalities that have been systemic for centuries. But seasons are temporary. To describe this as a season of racial reckoning implies an end is not far off. In reality, the work to address and ultimately end these inequalities will not be finished once this, quote, season is over. That work will continue. It has to continue. And a commitment to that work applies to everyone, including the organization that produces this podcast, WUNC. WUNC has released a statement about Black lives and its commitment to racial equity. My colleagues Kamaya Truitt and Naomi Prelo were a part of the team that put the statement together. Here they are with some of those words.
Black lives matter. WUNC believes this because it is true, and truth fuels what we do at North Carolina Public Radio.
WUNC does not believe that saying Black Lives Matter is a political statement or supportive of any single organization, or that it conflicts with our journalistic mission. In fact, saying and believing that Black Lives Matter enhances that journalistic mission by acknowledging the various levels of systemic racism with which our social, political, and corporate establishments are infused.
Too often, WUNC has defaulted to and amplified the views of these establishments without questioning the structures that allow for race-based privilege and inequities. Stating Black Lives Matter is also an admission. that we have been short-sighted and at times insincere in our efforts to diversify our workforce and consistently include voices and perspectives from a broad cross-section of our community.
WUNC is committed to rooting out its own systemic and institutional racism and pledges to do better, to be more representative of our community, and to hold the pillars of power to account to do the same.
The full statement is posted at our website, wunc.org/tested. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Charlie Shelton Ormond. Leonida Inge will be back this time next week. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.